Welcome to the Tulsa Music Stream. And now, your host, Scott and Janice Squires. You want the dirt? You've got it.
Hey everyone, welcome to Tulsa Music Stream. This is episode 106, and we'll be joined shortly with Eric Martin. He's the lead singer of the band Mr. Big, and they were just recently here in Oklahoma not too far ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, all of our friends on Facebook, if you're watching on Facebook, make sure you follow our page and share this stream on your favorite pages, your favorite groups, tag your friends, do all that good stuff. We appreciate all that. And if you're watching on YouTube, all of our friends and supporters on YouTube, make sure you hit subscribe and hit like and that notification bell. We appreciate that. We're almost to 1,000 subscribers. Yep. We're like less than 20 away.
That's right.
Almost like 18.
That's right.
So, yeah. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at TUL Music Stream.
Here's Eric, guys. We're going to get him in the room, get him settled into his audio and video, and then we're going to kick this thing off. So I'm going to put us back on screen.
I love it when they show up on time.
Oh, man, he's the best. Can you hear us okay, Eric?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm going to put you on screen. We do have a nice contingent of your fans in here with us tonight. We so appreciate your time. I know the tour has probably been quite exhausting. You guys have been going at it hard and heavy, so we are so appreciative of your time tonight. Let's get right. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm wearing my struggle. The struggle is real.
A little bit of fatigue.
Yeah, I'm totally fatigued right now, so just snap me out of it.
Hey, man, you're good. Again, we appreciate you. We're going to try to make this fun and lighthearted, and then we're going to get you to bed. So hang in there with us. Let's get into it. We're talking about you guys being in the middle of
Damn, girl.
What? Hey, man, I'm moving. We're going to go, man. Here we go. You're in the middle of the Big Finish tour. You guys are playing the Lean Into It album in its entirety for audiences here in the U.S. and abroad. From the looks of the pictures and the turnouts, things are going amazing, but I want to hear in your words how the tour's going so far.
Talk to me, because I kind of get cut out a little bit.
Can you hear me okay? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, let's try that again. We've been looking on your Facebook page. The pictures of the tour look amazing. It looks like the turnouts here in the U.S. and overseas have been amazing. But I want to hear in your words how the tour's going so far.
The tour's, it couldn't be better. It's just, I hate to admit it, but, you know, I mean, are we making the right choice? No, I mean, I'm sure everybody in the band has different reasons for to calling it quits. I mean, obviously, the big reason in the beginning was because of Pat Torpey. And then it was just kind of, it ran its course. And we didn't tour that much. When we got back together in 2009, we, you know, made a record and toured a little bit. And then another year would go by, and then we'd do another one. But, and maybe 2 years would go by. When we got back together in 2009, we decided that we were going to make everything painless and not like freak out and have to do it exactly what the record company wanted, and you know, have to tour, have to make a record. But now we have been touring for all this time, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and it's rewarding. And I don't know if it's a novelty or not, but all the shows have been sold out.
Yeah.
We've traveled. Billy always used to say this, and kind of apropos, but, you know, a lot of stamps in the passport. This is actually my fourth passport.
Wow.
With Mr. Big. So a lot of traveling, a lot of good stuff. But, yeah, this tour, it couldn't be any – this is the best way to go, too. You know, go out with a bang. Everybody loves each other. It's a bro fest. Yeah. And everybody's sounding good.
Well, that's
I mean,
cool.
Not me right now, because today's my day off. So If I got a little bit of a sore throat, too bad.
Talk as soft as you need to. We can hear you just fine. Now, you kind of mentioned it a minute ago. You said, are we making the right decision? And for the folks who don't know, it looks like the tour runs through the end of August, and then that's where the dates cut off. If, in your opinion, do you feel like, are the guys just tired? They're ready to take, to just be done with it? Is it health stuff? What's the main reason for stopping?
I think Pat Torpy in the beginning was our thing where we were like, well, why should we just keep going on without Pat?
Yeah.
But we have. I don't know. I can't tour like this anymore. Gotcha. This is it's tough on me. You know, I mean, God, man, I'm boohoo. I know so many great lead singers like Jeff Scott Soto, who's diehard doing it, you know, and he sings like a bird, and he's doing great, and he loves being out on the road. So do I, but I just don't like, I don't like the really long tours anymore. I mean, I don't think I can handle it anymore.
Gotcha. It's really tough on the voice, having to sing every single night, or have to be, you know, sing 3-4 nights in a row, then you get a day or two off, then you're back on 3-4 more, you know. It's got to be tough.
It is a little tough. I mean, I'm not 30, 40, 50, or close to 60. I mean, like, I'm pushing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So.
Well, you guys are definitely putting your final stamp on your legacy with this tour. You said that you're a man of your word. You know, you're not going to, you know, come back in a few more years and do another reunion tour. You said this is it. So.
This is it. I said this, you know, I say this to everybody. I mean, more power to Kiss and Motley Crue and all those guys that pretty much everybody in the world have seen those bands like umpteenth times. No, I mean, after August, we're done. I mean, we're done touring. I'd love it if we came back and played a show, a couple shows a year.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that stuff like that. I wanted to do more records, but it doesn't look like it's in the cards. We got a new record coming out. Yeah, that one. Those are not my hands, by the way. People go, hey, are those your hands? Yes. I tattooed them with, like, you know, the world map in Latin. Anyway, I wanted to keep the door open. I just didn't want to tour, like, you know, year after year. I didn't want to tour, like, for a year.
Sure.
Like we're I'm sorry, I'm choking here, man.
You're fine.
You're good.
I've had the worst day ever.
Oh,
can I tell you about it? No, no. No, I've had a really bad day.
Sorry, man.
A couple of weeks ago, it was a week ago. I was trying to help our guitar tech lift the trailer, the drawbridge of the trailer. On our equipment truck area that we're pulling from the tour bus, and I'm helping him do this, and I had a couple knocks in me, and so I'm pushing it up, and my hand slipped, and it pops me on the head, right?
Oh.
And I got this black guy, but then it pushed me into the street, and I landed right on my chest, and I broke. I fractured a rib. So, so I just went to the doctor today. Hey, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm right now, I feel pretty good. I can, you know, breathe and everything.
Yeah.
Man, bless your heart.
But yeah.
Well, you're in a safe space right there. You got the bed behind you,
that's
man.
That's right.
You know, just lay down and go to sleep.
Hey, look, this hotel doesn't have any really cool ambiance. I mean, that picture is it.
Just stare deep into it.
I'm looking around the room. The trash can has a little red in it. I thought, oh, that might be some color. Nah, it is what it is. It's drab. I deserve it. I'm an idiot.
Nah. Well, maybe we can make you feel better by telling you about all your. You've got fans in here from Japan. We've got Buffalo in the house.
Florida.
Of course, we got Florida. We got lots of Oklahoma people in here. So
yeah.
So you are loved.
No, crazy.
No, nothing crazy. It's all nothing but love.
No, we're back. It's all good.
She mentioned that you guys did your lean into it in its entirety. Now, was on May 11th, was that the first time you guys done that? Or because I saw the news that you guys did that in Highland, California, the entirety of Lean Into It. Was that the first time that you've did that?
It was where we did the Lean Into It album. Is that what you're saying? You mean where we played it live, not
right.
Where we
created
the album. Yeah. No. It's like on this tour, this is the first time we've played the Lean Into It album.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So even like, was it last night, the night before we played in Roseville, and we had never played the song My Kind of Woman before, or a song Never Say Never. And it was the first time we ever played that. So that's what I'm saying. It's not shtick. It's true, you know?
Right. Well, now you kind of touched on it a minute ago. I just want to confirm that I heard you right, because that was actually one of my other questions. Even though the touring's done, do you guys think you might make more albums? Are you saying you think 10 is it as far as the albums also?
I don't know. I think, I hope we do. Because it's so much fun writing songs with the guys in the band, you know?
Yeah.
I love writing. I just did a good portion of these songs with Paul. I flew to Portland and we hooked up and the music just flowed right out of us. And it was a lot of fun. I've been threatening to do a solo album for so many years, but I don't want that. I really like writing songs for Mr. Big.
Yeah.
Great rock and roll band. And it's a shame, you know, that we might have to put that to bed.
Well, while we're kind of talking about how special it is for you to be involved with Mr. Big, share some sentiments on the two legendary guys that are at your side every night. Let's talk about Paul Gilbert first. What does he mean to you, man, both personally and professionally?
He's a great kid. He's always been he's been pretty quiet over the decades that I've known him. But on this trip, he's just yapping away, telling stories and having a good old time. He's a brilliant musician. He's one of those guys that, you know, he hears anything, he can play it. Just like that, you know, like a savant or something, you know.
Yeah.
He's a great writer. When I went to Portland and I was hanging with him to write songs, we didn't spend that much time over our years prior to that. I mean, we talked once in a while and we talked about the music and then we rocked out on stage. But when I went to Portland, it was like seeing a whole new light. You know, he's a great husband. He's a father to his beautiful son, Marlon. And, you know, I stayed around the corner at a kind of a bed and breakfast. And I went there every morning and, you know, brought some coffee and we're just sitting out there just shooting the shit before we wanted to start working. And I don't know, a really lovely guy. We didn't have that much in common back in the day. You know, I would maybe not now, but like I was pretty hyper back in the day and kind of a social butterfly too much. And he was a quiet, shy guy. He just got a great heart. He's a sweetheart guy.
When you first joined the band, you met these guys and when you just, you know, talked about Paul, I mean, were you a little intimidated? You got Sheehan's coming from a Daily Roth band, you know, and you've done a lot
I was scared shitless. when we first got together, if you heard some stories or interviews about how we started, this guy, Mike Varney, producer and guitar headhunter, discovered Paul Gilbert and Richie Kotzen and a bunch of other people. And he had Shrapnel Records And I think he produced Racer X and all that. There's Richie and a very young Eric Martin. I'm probably in my 40s. Nothing happened along the way. Something happened. My balls dropped at 50. Anyway. So yeah, Mike Varney, and he goes, I was just dropped on Capitol Records as a solo artist. They didn't know what to do with me. And I was, my publishing company, people were trying to get me a deal, kind of almost like going into the Michael Bolton, Paul Young, Hall and Oates type genre. And I would have done anything. My whole career was like this, boom, 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 from 1983, you know, in like the Eric Martin band days. And so I just couldn't get a break. I, you know, almost grabbed the brass ring, but was just, you know, just I never got it. But he goes, hey, you want to join a band? There's this guy, Billy Sheehan. And I'm like, he goes, do you know who that is? And I go, not a clue. I'm sorry, I didn't know who he was at all. And he goes, he's in David Lee Roth. And I go, oh yeah, that guy's got a crazy, wild, cool, fancy colors on stage, really prolific bass player. Yeah, Billy Sheehan, yeah, Yankee Rose. And right. And he goes, yeah, he's on the other line. And we talked for a little while, and he told me that he loved my voice and he liked the rock and soul element of it. And he said, I want to start a band. I want to get a, I've left David Lee Roth and I want to start a band. And I go, so who do we have? And he goes, just us. That was it. Just him and I, we wrote a couple songs together. He had a couple songs, I had a couple songs. And we went hoofing it all over Los Angeles to try to get a record deal. And that didn't work out. And then he said, well, you know, let's start getting some players. And he told me about this kid, Paul Gilbert. And well, Mike Varney did as well. And I, again, not a clue, but Mike told me to look on the back of a guitar player for the Practicing Musician magazine. Paul had just did an ad, and it was him sitting at a kitchen table with a robe and a Wheaties box, with him on the Wheaties box, and he's eating cereal, and said, you know, said some kind of a slogan. And I went, well, I go, because I didn't think we had anything in common. I mean, Billy was a lot of notes and a lot of stuff going on, and Paul, I studied a little bit of Racer X, but then I looked at that picture and I thought, well, the guy's got a good sense of humor. He can't be all that bad, you know? He came in to, we were rehearsing at a place called The Alley in North Hollywood. And I don't remember exactly where that was, but yeah, Lancashire, somewhere. It was right around the corner from my hotel, the Beverly Garland Hotel that I've been staying at for like decades. Anyway, he came in and he was super skinny. And I don't know if he did have fringe on his guitar, but it could have been. But he had like painted F holes on his guitar. I was like, well, that's odd, to myself. And these gigantic speaker cabinets, they were like day glow orange and green. And Billy setting up his, you know, Starship Sheehan, his wall of sound, you know. And I got a rented a baby grand piano, because I was in Eric Martin band. I wrote a lot of songs on piano. So here I am with my rinky dink piano. And here's these guys, to me, look like the gods of metal. I had no clue, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was super intimidated, but Billy, you know, he's another incredibly smart man. Definitely his way of the highway a lot, but he's one of those guys that walk the walk and talk the talk. Mm-hmm. I love playing with these guys. I didn't know if I could actually fit with this kind of, with this sound, but you know, I was writing these songs and trying to thinking more. You know, Bad Company, or I love Paul Rogers, like Free or Humble Pie.
Yeah.
That was the kind of music that I grew up with. And that's the kind of rock and roll band that I wanted to be, to create with Billy. Cause we were talking about it, you know, that, you know, with my, the way I play and the way you sing with that rock and soul sound, that's how I want to make this band, you know? So, but then when Paul came in, I was like, how's this going to work? But then Paul telling me about, you know, he loves the Beatles and Zeppelin, and he was loving all the things that we love too, you know, Humble Pie and Spooky Tooth, and oh God, I love Grand Funk back in the day. Just some great rock and soul stuff.
It was a good mix for the time, you know?
Yeah.
It was a good mixture for the time.
It wasn't.
So, and then Pat Torpy came in to audition. There was a guy, there was a drummer that Paul had, a friend of his named Bobby Orechica. Really nice guy, but it didn't work out. And he left, and Pat was the second guy to come in. And, oh man, he shined like a diamond. He goes, well, you know, what do you guys want to play? We can jam on some steps. Because we didn't have any real songs, just a couple of the things that me and Billy had written. And he just jammed on a bunch of Led Zeppelin and sang like a bird. I mean, he was amazing. Like, he sang like Paul McCartney, actually. And it was subliminal or telepathic or whatever. He was in. And he goes, well, am I in the band? And of course you're in the band. And shortly after that, we wrote the whole record in 8 days. I mean, wow. It took us a while. We perfected it, you know, worked on it, sliced and diced, cut and pasted, did all that kind of stuff with it. But we wrote the majority of that record in 8 days. I mean, Billy already had the makings of Addicted That Rush. On piano, I wrote Big Love and Rock and Roll Over from the Hat and Shoes album, as my kids called it. They, you know, they go, Dad, it doesn't have any name. Hat and Shoes, the Train album, you know, shit like that. Yeah. The one with the head, the one with the scarecrow, you know.
Well, we know what Pat meant to you. I want to focus on Pat a little bit more, because I know you've said this. I'm assuming it may have been a consensus with Paul and Billy as well. But you guys really, there was a lot of doubt whether Mr. Big could continue without Pat. Just talk a little bit more about how special he was to you.
He was my he was the anchor of the band. We had a guy named Ange Dunleavy. He was our drum tech. He coined that name right there, the anchor. You know, people say the glue, the paste. He was like the umpire at times, the referee. I always went to Pat. If I had a problem with anything, the way the music or the band dynamic, I always went to Pat, and he always made me feel better about it and not freak out. I'm a singer. That's what we do. You know, we complain a little bit, you know, like, I mean, look, before I joined Mr. Big, I was my own man, you know. It was the Eric Martin band, and it was, everybody ran the band, but, you know, I wrote a lot of the songs, and yeah, I was, and when I did my solo stuff, I was the leader. So then when I got Mr. Big, we all shared being the leader. And, you know, that was a little rough for me in the beginning. You know, I'm going, well, yeah, I'll do this and do that. And it doesn't work that way in a democracy, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got knocked down a peg a little bit, and that was good. But over the years of touring and just the band dynamics, when you're cooped together on a tour bus, an airplane, or whatever, and then when you got hits, you're constantly together campaigning for the record, whatever. Anyway, getting back to Pat. Pat was my guy. He was my older brother. Again, another smart cookie, all-American boy. He was. He loved sports. I love sports. He had kind of a military background. I do. We had a lot in common. I mean, he gets so pissed off at me a lot of times. He used to strangle the crap out of me sometimes too, but and I deserved it. But I felt like I could talk to him.
Yeah.
But Paul was quiet, you know.
Yeah.
And listening on his headphones, you know, almost soaking up the world in his head musically. I mean, it was amazing. I used to share a room with Paul back in the day in these Motel Sixes, and like all day long, and I'm watching soap operas like an idiot. I could have had free guitar lessons, you know, but and same with Billy. You know, they're just, you know, they're Billy was, Billy's. He's a Renaissance man. He's the kind of guy, he is the life of the party. He's really smart. He does call a lot of the shots. And business wise, we're all good like that. And friendly wise, over the years, since we got back together in 2009, it's been pretty damn good.
Awesome.
But Pat was my go-to. You know, it's hard to explain that. I didn't always go to Pat as a suggestion box or complain or you know, cry about some stupid shit that would happen to the band. It would be more like just life in general. He was funny.
Yeah.
So, he always made me feel like kind of stupid sometimes when I would act like an idiot. He'd go, "Oh God, Eric, don't rock the boat." That's what he always used to say. "I'm almost home. I haven't seen my wife in 4 months. Don't rock the boat."
Oh, wow.
"It just spilt milk. Not a big deal." I'm like, yeah, but I don't like this. And I'm, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was young. I was probably in my 50s.
Yeah. Well, you guys together, you know, you wrote all these uplifting songs. I mean, plenty of songs, yeah. All these songs, the lyrics are uplifting. I don't know if that was a conscious effort for you guys to write these type of songs that were more uplifting than a lot of the stuff that was coming out in those days. What song or album and or album was the toughest for you guys to write? For you personally, which one was the toughest?
Defying Gravity, actually, the one before this 10 came out.
Okay.
But that was a difficult record for me to write because I felt a little pressured on that one. All the other records got that, the Hat and Shoes, that was fun. That was, I sat down with a ghetto blaster and it was cassettes then, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I just was writing like a maniac. And that was fun. It was scary because I didn't know if I could do it. You know, writing, I played in a rock band with Eric Martin band, but I was like, in Capitol Records, I was more of a R&B rocker guy, if that's such a thing. And I wrote, some of my songs in the past were pablum, and they were like, they're pretty fluffy. But with Mr. Big, I wanted to be, I was kind of trying to channel my best Steven Tyler and try to be a funny and satirical, lyrical content and then lean into it. That I actually at the end of the first album, I had met my songwriting partner, Andre Pessis. Him and I, we got together with another mutual friend of ours, Jonathan Kane. Jonathan Kane from Journey introduced me to Andre. Mm-hmm. And Andre and I had a great collaboration and still do to this day. We wrote a lot of stuff on the Lean Into It album with Mr. Big, Daddy Brother, Live and Kickin', Just Take My Heart, you know, a lot of good stuff. And then I started branching out as a writer, and I started writing with other people, Jim Balance from Bryan Adams fame.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun to make. What else? Bump Ahead, a lot of fun, except when you want to turn in your product. And that was such a great record. Andre and I had written a song called Promise of the Moon. That was a beautiful song, and it wasn't a To Be With You, But and I didn't. I'm not a pie maker, man. I was like, my record company, Atlantic, at the time, wanted me to be a pie maker. To Be With You was a number one hit single, and they were like, give me the next To Be With You, and I go, right. I just do that.
It's not
my makeup. You know?
Well, so, Elena, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying that Defying Gravity was the toughest because that was kind of, it wasn't the good back against the wall. It was a lot of pressure to come up with something really fast. Mm-hmm. And a couple songs I like and a couple songs I don't. But anyway, go ahead, Elena. Go ahead.
Elena Bernardo in the chat room, she says, I'd like to know about the songs from the new album. What can he tell us about it? If they have a story behind the lyrics, what are they about? Does the album have a ballad?
Yes, the album has a ballad, and that's, I opened up a huge can of worms on that one. I don't want to really get into detail until after the song comes out, because I want people to listen to it and take the words however they want to take them. I wrote a song called The Frame, which was about how my last wife, Denise, the mother of my children, and still great friends, just saw her at the Fillmore in San Francisco. We had mutually split up. No bad, crazy thing happened. We just fell out of love, and we'd split. And I went on the road, and when I came back home, we had two homes going. One was like going to be like a bed and breakfast, which ended up to be an Eric Martin bed and breakfast. It became my home when I got from the road. But when I went back to the band house, or I'm sorry, the main house with my wife and my kids, nothing in the house had me in it. Like, I was out of the pictures. I was out of, like, it didn't even look like it existed. And, you know, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not blaming her, least of all, because she had to move on, because I know this is kind of personal and shit, but like, you got Mr. Big Mouth. I'll tell you anything.
That's all right.
So when I got home, I felt like sort of, you know, expatriate and nothing in the house. So I wrote a song about it called The Friend.
Wow.
And it kind of opens up a little. It shows a little too much of my heart on my sleeve. I don't do that a lot. I'll write love songs, but it'll be a little subliminal. They're not always about me, but this one definitely is. And this was a tough one, but it's a beautiful song. And it's, again, it's not a To Be With You, but it's a gorgeous song.
Wow.
It's dark. Before I had a title for it, it was called To Be With You Dark. That's what I was calling it.
We're looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah, it was solace for me. You know, when people say, when they write a poem or when they write a song or they write a letter to somebody that they love, that they're not going to see anymore, it becomes like, you know, kind of eases the pain a little bit. Yeah. And that's what happened to me on this song. Even when I was showing it to Paul, he goes, "Are you sure you want to put this out?" I go, yeah. And he goes, "Oh, wow." And we even had to ask his, he goes, I go, "Ask your wife to see what she thinks." And I played it for Emmy, and she goes, "Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful song." So,
well, I want to uplift you with some comments from people that love you here in the chat room. You know, one of the things we try to do with this show that makes it a little different than some other podcasts you might do is we go live. And the reason we do that is so fans can interact with you and leave you nice comments and messages. So Tina Agostino says, "Hi from Buffalo, New York area. See you on June 6th.
Billy Sheehan's hometown.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. And then Ron Giuseppe says, "You nailed Roseville like a champ with that rib." So that should make you feel good.
That's, That's Ron Giesick, Jana.
Giesick?
That's Ron Giesick. You know, he's an old friend of mine, magician, a musician, Giesick. Harmonica player, all-around cool guy.
Cool.
Soldier fortune. Yeah, cool guy.
Sorry for butchering your name there, Ron. I apologize.
Yeah, just call him Ron. It's
Ron,
easier.
Okay. And then we've got Yoko Matsunaga from Japan in here saying, hi, Eric. That is amazing.
Hello.
Suzanne Drew says, Mr. Big is amazing. Saw the show in Wabash, Indiana a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Our friend Mari Abbott is in here and says that they opened for you guys in 88. He really struggled that show. I guess his pedal board shorted out, but then said you guys came up and killed it. So he's got that memory of you all.
I know.
Gina Chastain, she lives in Florida, but she's traveling to Michigan to see you guys at District 142 next week in Wyandotte. So that will be amazing.
Woo-hoo.
Absolutely. There's a ton more. I'm going to send you the link to this after we're done. And if you, in all your free time, if you want to hop in here and just say hey to the fans.
Oh, my free time.
that was dripping with sarcasm, I know.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. This is my free time. Right
I know.
Here.
We appreciate it so much. Okay, so let me get to one other thing that I wanted to bring up. Our viewer Tim Hewitt is in here, and he's a huge fan of yours. He asked if you could.
Who is it?
Tim Hewitt. He's from Tulsa. He's where we are. He's a big fan of yours, and he asked if you wouldn't mind sharing your story about being contacted by Eddie Van Halen as a possible replacement for David Lee Roth when he left the band.
Hey, that story is so old.
Yeah.
The fact that I was okay. Out of the blue, somewhere in the 80s, Edward Van Halen had contacted me. He got my number from the producer that produced my last Capitol record, Danny Korchmar, and Greg Ladani, who produced the Building the Perfect Beast album. Actually, that album, we did it at Record One in LA, and it was, Don Henley was in the one studio, the bigger studio, and I was in the little one. And when Don Henley would go home, his whole band would come over and play on my record with Danny Korchmar and Greg Ladani. Anyway, Danny Korchmar, what they called Cooch, he ran into Edward, I think at the Letterman show a long time ago, where when Eddie played, in between commercials or whatever. And he played on my record, and then Edward had called my house and said, hey, it's Edward Van Halen. I'm going to Palm Springs right now, but and I said, oh yeah, of course I saved the message. I'm going to Palm Springs right now, and I heard your record, and I don't like it. I don't like
wow.
your record,
jeez.
But I love your voice, and I think we should get together, maybe jam a little bit, and I'll call you next week. So I was freaking out, and of course, Eddie Van Halen gave me a call, and then I think he called again, and I wasn't there, and he said I'm going to be calling you tomorrow afternoon. So I got one of these recorders with a little blue suction cup, and I put it on. It was a princess telephone back in the day. There's no cell phone. It was it looked like a hello. So we just chatted, and I was kind of bummed that he didn't like my record, but he loved my voice, and he heard the potential, and he heard the you go, man, you got a great scream and high range. And again, the rock and soul thing, he liked it.
Yeah.
And we just chatted a little bit, and he said, I'd like you to come down up to North Hollywood where I live. I'll put you up. He said, I'll put you up in a hotel. And then I said, well, look, I have written a song for a movie soundtrack with Neil Sean, and we're both going up. We're going to up, down, sorry. to LA to do the premiere of this movie called Teachers.
Uh-huh.
Something like that. and I'm going to be staying at the Sportsman's Lodge. And he goes, oh, shit, I live right down the street, well, right down the hill from that, my studio. And, you know, he's saying 5150, and I'm like going, you know, I'm sweating.
Yeah.
Right? When he's talking about it, I'm going, he said 5150. You know, my girlfriend's sitting in the corner going, what's happening? I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just freaking out.
Wow.
I listened to that recording back, and it's, and me, like, he's going, yeah, I just don't like your record. And I'm like, yeah, it sucks, man. You're right. It sucks.
Oh,
I was so blown away by the man giving me a call, you know?
Sure.
Anyway, yeah. I went to the Sportsman's Lodge. We did our movie premiere thing. And I remember it was raining, and God, he was right down the street. And I'm going to tell your boy right now, if you haven't heard about it yet, I'm the one who chickened. I'm the one who didn't want to be with him. Yeah, I chickened out of the thing. I couldn't go. I was so scared.
Wow.
And I made these things up in my head that, you know, David Lee Roth, I mean, those are pretty mighty big clown shoes to fill. You know, I wasn't a dancer. Yeah. I'm a Paul Rogers guy that just kind of stands there and moves around a little bit around the cage.
Right.
But not, you know, I think in my younger years, I was a little, well, in the Mr. Big years, I had my moments, sure. The early days. But at that time, I didn't have any confidence.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, you have to have a little cockiness.
Yes,
if you're gonna have,
of course.
Anything,
yes.
That happened to you in your life.
Yep.
You know, I ran into Gary Sharon. We did a small tour with Extreme in Australia. And I talked to him about that, and I go, God, you have balls of steel. You're so brave. And he just said he had a lot more confidence than I did. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened.
You know, both your bands, Extreme and Mr. Big, kind of had that huge hit, you know, the More Than Words, To Be With You kind of thing. And you guys kind of got like, you know, like you were talking earlier, how everyone was like, hey, we need you to write another To Be With You, and you're and all the pressure and everything. Did you ever feel like you're not, you know, that the song was an amazing, amazing song, and it did a lot of things for you, but at the same time, did it, you know, kind of, I don't know, make things.
Like,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I love that song. I mean, I've written the makings of it when I was 16 years old. I had, you know, I'm the one who wants to be, but I had that, a little hold on little girl, show me what he's done to you kind of thing.
Hmm.
My version of it was very Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young a little bit, but it still had the same melody, same attack. But then, I'd lived with that song a good portion of my life, trying to impress my sister's girlfriends, and it worked. But then in 1988, I rewrote it with an artist named David Graham. Mm. And he helped a lot. He turned it into a little bit more Beatles, and did that all, you know, his Give Peace a Chance kind of clap
mm-hmm.
part, you know? And I've always loved that song. I never get tired of singing it, but I get scared singing it because, man, you got to be just like you were back in, you know, 1991 when it came out for the audience. And I do my best.
Sure.
I have a lot of help with the band and our new drummer, Nick DiVirgilio. He shadows me a bit on that. But it's kind of a hard song to sing, to be like, just right on, snap on,
sure.
Perfect.
When that song took off, it took off. It was all over the place. It was all over the radio.
I mean,
it was on MTV. What were your thoughts of the popularity that was building? You know, the fame was building. You're a young cat. You're with these, you know, little, you know, these guys have already been down this road with David Lee Roth and stuff. And here you are, and this song is taking off. Did it scare you at all? Did you wonder what's happening next?
I was a big fish in a small pond in San Francisco. And outside of the Bay Area, I mean, I had an album called Sucker for a Pretty Face in 1983, and it did a little, it got on the radio a little bit, not much at all. I mean, some big radio stations in the United States had played it, but it came and went. And when I got in Mr. Big, you know, Paul Gilbert and Billy Sheehan show with all the guitar pyrotechnics, and Pat was known from, The Knack. He was a session player. He played on everybody's record. A lot of people knew who Pat was, but you know, Billy with David Lee Roth, like you said, I was basically, when I do the gig and I'd sing the gig, I go out to the loading dock to meet the fans, you know, out in the back, and they go, "You're the singer, dude." Nobody knew who I was. You know, they look at the album and I go, "Yeah, my name is Eric Martin." They go, yeah, great. Could you go get Billy and Paul to set up my guitar?" No, it's just the way it was. And I didn't have a name or a face until that To Be With You video came out.
Right.
And I used to make this joke because this happened once. Somebody came up to me and they go, "Oh my God, you're," and I go, "Eric Martin." And they go, "The To Be With You guy." So you can't, I couldn't win, you know? I felt the change, but not when it was happening. When we were playing, it was a great song and people loved it, but I think maybe we were on tour with Rush. I don't remember, but, and we were getting obviously some push because, there's a huge long story on that one, and I'll just make it short. There was a radio station out of Lincoln, Nebraska, and it was a programmer or general manager by the name of John Terry, and he did this format called Smash or Trash. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, you guys remember that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he played To Be With You, and you know, everybody was back in the day, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, couple pops, Saturday night, Sunday night, whatever it is. And they're like, "Let's smash this pop band," you know, or whatever. And they loved that song. And it did spread like wildfire, but it we'd lean into it had been out for a little while. And we had released a few singles, and they had Alive and Kickin' was a video. I think Lucky This Time was played on the radio, Never Say Never, to try to push that song. And I was hearing things from the management that we had, Herbie Herbert, you know, managed Journey and all that.
Yeah.
I was hearing management that they were thinking about dropping us. So I didn't read Billboard magazine or really pay attention. I heard it on the radio a few times, but I'm like, "Wow, that's exciting." And I've heard my own music on the radio before, but like, I didn't know it was going to be a gigantic smash hit. So when it was a smash hit, I swear to God, I had so much fear that it was going to be number one for about a day and then drop off. Mm-hmm. And have to completely start all over again. So I like became like this little worrywart for 3 weeks when it was number one in America. And that's when I did buy a Billboard magazine. When I go, "Oh, Billboard magazine, we would never be in a magazine like this." But if you turn the page past the hit, you know, the top 100, it's hits of the world. And I'm looking at that, it's like number one, number two, three, one, two, three, everywhere.
Wow.
Like
wow.
14, 15 countries.
That's incredible. So
that's when, like, you know, I started to get a little cocky.
let me get to another couple of you. Go ahead.
I'm waiting by the phone, right? And I'm waiting by the phone for Edward then, you know, "Please call," you know. Yeah. Yeah.
We're getting close to where we need to start wrapping up so we can let you go get your rest. But I do want to get to another couple of your comments here. Michael Raphael's in here. He says, 415 fan here. Was Read My Lips ever recorded?
Read My Lips, 415, the area code of San Francisco. Read My Lips was recorded, I think it was 84. It was after the Sucker for Pretty Face record. Some of that stuff is going to come out. It's been out. There's a record company called Metallic Blue Records, and they put out like a Sucker for Pretty Face a record that's like the high end demos of the record and remastered from my early days, 1983. And then after that, me and John Nyman, who was in the band, he's in Y&T now. Troy Lacetta, drummer for Tesla, doing his own thing now. But we had written songs after 1983, when the band got dropped from Elektra. We still continued to be a band, and we wrote songs together and did our thing. Yeah.
You're talking about, you know, your tour here in America. You just got done playing in the UK. Your popularity in Japan is just overwhelming. It's huge. And I guess I don't understand it.
Scott, I got to tell you, I don't understand it either, but I do understand the fact that it was the first. America took a while. But Japan was the first place that embraced us.
Which is great.
Oh, man. And so, yeah, I mean, and we kind of feel like we grew up with the folks. And, you know, every time when bands go to Japan, it's hard to cut you off. I know you're pressed for time. And you're me good. And my big mom and the coffee's kicking in.
You're Woo! Good. You're good.
So when bands go over there and they go, thank you, you know, you do. I don't think everybody gets treated like the Beatles, but it's exciting. They just love Western rock and roll, you know, or, you know, American, British, European rock and roll. And when we're in it, they were just loving us. And so when bands go, okay, we'll be back, we'll see you next time. And they never come back because it's so goddamn expensive to go there.
Right.
You know, and we probably ate it a couple times. You know, we broke even a couple times just to keep coming back because this was a great market for us. We were on the radio all the time over there. We had a lot more singles over there than we do here in America. Hmm. And then it branched out from Japan. I'm not saying, like, I love Japan and I love all the people that helped us, all the journalists and the radio station folks, Masi Ito, Kosakai, Burn Magazine, all these great people helped us along the way. But from there, we branched out to all over Asia, and we just got lucky. And we just kept coming back.
You played Hong Kong, Taiwan recently in 2023, and then you also played Singapore.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, brother. China. Yeah.
One of your Japanese fans in here, Yoko Matsunaga, they're asking what, and this is the same question that was asked by Ileana Bernardo, what is your plan for next year onward? And then Yoko wants to know any plan for acoustic shows in Japan.
I did a record called Eric Martin Over Japan, and it was a live acoustic record. And that was years ago with a guy named John McNamara from Australia. And I took Pat Torpy with me. He played a cajon and we sang a lot of the Mr. Big songs on acoustic. That's kind of a dream for me. I'd love to come back and do an acoustic tour in Japan. Mm-hmm. My next project is, it's Mr. Big, you know, all the way up until the end. And that's a priority. Mm-hmm. They're my brothers, you know, and I love this music. But my next project is Tak Matsumoto Group, TMG. About 20 years ago, I did a record with this native son of Japan, great guitar player. He plays in a band called Bees. Him and a singer, Koshi Inaba, 90 million records. It's off the hook. Billy Sheehan actually toured with him in Japan at one time. But I did a record with Talk, with me, Jack Blades, my Bay Area brother, and Chris Frazier from Foreigner. Now, this time, it's kind of a reunion, and it's going to be me, Talk, Jack, and Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses.
Wow.
So cool, so cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we've got 10 songs written for it already. And so when Mr. Big, I think after the Buffalo show, which is, I believe, is June 6th, I go home to San Francisco Bay Area on June 7th, and on the 12th, I record the TMG record.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, busy
so
guy.
That'll be for a couple weeks. Then I'll try to heal my rib up and take it easy, not answer the phone, and then go back on the road with Mr. Big. And then when the Mr. Big train has stopped, I'm going to tour with Talk Matsumoto Group.
Fantastic.
In September and October.
That's great.
And then go to Japan for some solo shows. That's a whole new movie. That's a whole new podcast for you to figure out. That 100 years ago, I did something called Mr. Vocalist.
Yes, yeah. We know.
I sing J-pop songs made popular by women.
Yes.
And like a male interpretation of it. It was really a lot of hard work, a lot of fun. And I made this, I know you got to go, but I made this joke where I went, Mr. Vocalist, that's kind of pretentious. It feels weird, Mr. Big, Mr. Vocalist. If you're like, oh man, I don't know if I could get away with that. And they go, no, trust me, it's going to be great. So I did the one record and it sold 300,000 records. And then I went, you will refer to me as Mr. Vocalist. I embraced it. And I gave it a silly, goofy name. But I did about three records and a DVD and a box set and all that. But I'm going to go back to Japan in December and do like some Christmas shows. Wow. And then after that, Jana?
It's Jana. It's Jana.
I like it. It's great. I love it. Rolls off the tongue so easy. All
right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, Janet Scott. And after that, after like, January 1st, New Year's or whatever, I don't know, karaoke bars. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Joey Belladonna. Look at that guy. He's off doing all sorts of cover songs, karaoke.
I have been on the road with a partner, this guy named David Cottrell from England, and we travel around Europe together in his little dinky car. I know his girlfriend's going to say, that's my car. And we got the guitars in the back and the suitcases, and we've been at gas stations in Italy, and Kip Winger's filling up right next to me. That's what I do. I love the acoustic stuff.
Awesome.
It's easy on, it's easy to sing, and I can play like tons.
To be honest, Eric, we don't have to go, but I feel so guilty making you talk because I know you need to rest your voice.
Because of my voice?
I know you need to rest. But Scott, do you have anything else?
I wanted you to read some of those last few.
Yeah.
I got a place to go.
Okay. So, Ileana Bernardo says, I was at the show in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Unbelievable. Yeah. I'm going to keep that night in my heart forever. Angela Blakey, I hope I'm saying that right. I waited 15 years to see Mr. Big live, and I'm so glad I saw them in New Hampshire. One of the best shows I ever saw. We have a fan in here from the Philippines, Rachel Hernandez. I mean, it goes on and on, Eric. You've got a lot of love in here. I really encourage you to, when I send you the link, I want you to read all the love that you're getting in here.
Our friend Chuck Shute from the Chuck Shute podcast, he wanted for us to tell you hi. Actually listened to the podcast you did with him for a little bit of research, and I heard the story about the journey Chuck Shute from Chuck Shute Podcast.
Yeah.
He wanted to say hello to you. I listened to Yeah. I wanted to I listened to the interview that he did on you on Spotify, and you were telling a story about hiding in a closet when the Journey guys were showing up or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean I knew Neil and I knew Jonathan, but I don't think Steve Perry liked the fact that his manager, Herbie Herbert, who managed me, was spending any time and energy on another band besides Journey. And that makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So I just felt that it was necessary for me to hide in the closet. And I didn't want him to get pissed off, you know. Yeah. That was a weird day.
What else you got before we leave?
Doug Weber, he says, I saw Eric, Billy, and Paul play at a club in Oakland called the Omni. Before they even had a chosen name for the band yet. I imagine they played mostly songs from their debut album, but they were all unknown songs to everyone in the audience, of course. Fantastic memories. That's long ways back.
Dude, hey, I got to tell you something. Can I bend your ear on this story?
Of course. Yeah.
A good one. There was another gig. There was a newspaper magazine in Hayward, California, called The Informant, and they had a party, and Billy and Paul were, well, I got to backpedal a little bit. We were making Hat and Shoes album, and the drummer for Robert Plant had broke his arm or foot or whatever, playing soccer in an arena shower or whatever. He was on the road with Robert Plant. And his management called our management and said, do you know anybody who can fill this guy's shoes? And he goes, yeah, Pat Torpey. He's he loves Led Zeppelin. He knows all the Led Zeppelin songs. He wouldn't have to have hardly any rehearsal at all. But we're right in the middle of the record, but it's Robert Plant. And Pat was like, God, are you sure I'm going to be going on the road? I mean, I don't know how long it was. Billy knows exactly, but maybe 3 months. I don't know, but it, like, right in the middle of the record. And we gave him our blessing, and then Pat left. So me and Billy and Paul were like, I lived in the Bay Area, but these guys are stuck in some hotel in Oakland. Because we were recording at Fantasy Recording Studios. So the Informant magazine said, hey, why don't you guys put a little band together and jam at my party? And I had this, me and Troy had the idea, I think. So Tesla from that area, they're from Sacramento, but Troy lived in Hayward, and he knew Andy from the Informant. So we kind of put two bands together, Tesla, and we didn't even have the name Mr. Big yet, or we were maybe we did, but it wasn't out yet. I don't know what it was. I don't really, that was a long time ago. We played the Informant party, and then we did another gig at San Jose Civic, opening to Night Ranger, all people.
Wow.
Yeah, and so here's the story. Here's the goofy ass story. So years ago, Tesla, they used to be called City Kid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so they'd rehearse at Sacramento, and I'd see them all the time, and I kind of grew up there too. And they used to rehearse in an industrial area and on a street called Hammer Lane. And Troy was telling me that, like, I think we're going to call the band Hammer Lane. And I was like, that is an awesome name. Hammer Lane, that rocks, that kicks ass. It's got legs, man. And then so when I was making my solo record prior to that, with the Danny Korchmar thing, the band, the Tesla band, came to my studio. And I remember because Randy Jackson, I'm name dropping here, but that's okay. Randy Jackson from American Idol, kind of famous bass player, also in Journey. He was playing on my record.
Wow.
And so all the Tesla boys came in. They were so young. Tommy Skeel, Frankie Hannon, Troy Licata, Jeff Keith. Man, it was, and you know, a couple of straggler guys hanging out, and they played the record, and it was an acetate, and it didn't have any name on it. And I go, God damn, Hammer Lane, man, you guys kick ass. we're going to be called Tesla. And I say, hand to God, that is the stupidest name ever. I'll never make it with that name.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, man. And I hear about it all the time now. I run into Brian Weed. He goes, you never rain. What? You know, he gives me shit. So, yeah. So when we played the Informant gig, it was Hammer Lane.
Wow.
Yeah, Hammer Lane. And we played. I sang. I gave Jeff Keith something. I think he sang Big Love and Rock and Roll Over, or whatever we were working on, you know, gave him the cassette of it. I definitely sang Rock Me to the Top and Little Susie. Wow. We kind of traded it off. Yeah, there's no recorded stuff. I mean, that was
my next question. Does anybody have that?
Oh, I wish.
No that kidding. Yeah.
When we did do that San Jose thing, I think it might have said members of Mr. Big and members of Tesla, but nobody knew where really. I mean, they knew Billy.
Right.
You know. Maybe. But yeah.
Wow.
Well, Scott, do you have anything?
I've put my big foot in my mouth many, many times.
Haven't we all? It's okay. Do you have anything before? I'm going to have Eric go get some hot tea in the lobby there at the hotel.
Vidana Dutra?
Am I killing you?
Says, I'm so happy to seeing this live. So precious. Just wanted to thank Eric for the great Mr. Big show at Summer Breeze in April. Michelle Sambora on YouTube says, good night from Brazil. Great interview.
Oh, it's great. Nice.
Right on. Hey, Michelle. Hey, Donna. Donna Patera. Yeah.
Well, we want to remind everybody, you guys, let me find the find it here on my screen if I can. I want to make sure I put up that album cover of the new album that's coming out. This is coming out on July 12th. 11 songs of Mr. Big Brilliance, and it's called 10. So you guys need to make sure I think they can pre-order the album on your website. Am I right about that? I think they can.
I don't know. I don't know.
I want to say you can, but either way, just be watching for that release on July 12th. You are such a gentleman. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
So the album is titled 10. It has 11 tracks, and it comes out on the 12th.
Hey, did you realize that?
Scott, you troublemaker. It's the 10th album.
We know that, but he was going 10, 11, 12, like a smart
guy.
Right,
so it says it's the
10. Oh, I like that. Oh, yeah, then you're a smarter man than I am.
Boy, me too, because I wasn't following it for a second, but that's pretty great.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. I just want to thank you again for all of your time, and I will send you the link to this so you can come back in if you have time and just look at all the love you're getting. We love and appreciate you, man, and thank you for your time, and I do hope you get a good night's rest and rest up that voice.
This is the way I sound like all the time anyway, Jan. If you ever see me play, I mean, I don't sing like this. I talk like this. Anyway.
I understand. All right. You're a good guy.
All right, kids. Thank you very much. Let's do this again.
Let's do it for sure. We'll have you back to promote your activities going forward after Mr. Big. We're very pleased for you, and we admire you so much. Thanks again. Have a great night, Eric Martin.
Thank you.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye. So cool. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and hanging out with us. Tina says, take care, Eric. Michelle says, hello, Eric.
Yeah, what a nice guy.
July 12th, great birthday. Absolutely.
Such a great, great guy. Yeah, guys, thank you. That was really great numbers in here. Lots of nice comments and love for Eric. He is a sweetheart. What a great guy. It's so hard. I mean, man. Touring is so grueling on the body. And you guys probably know that. That's probably the no-brainer statement of the evening. But touring is so grueling. And then these guys, when they have a day off, here they are doing press instead of resting. It's a nonstop job, and that was amazing. We appreciate Eric giving us so much time and all the great viewership and comments.
Yeah, my last thing I was trying to say was the album title was 10. It's released on the 11th, there's 11 songs, and it's released on the 12th.
No, I got you. That's brilliant. I didn't pick up on that until you mentioned it. Nice job. That's very perceptive. Well, the fun does not stop tonight. We are going to be back here, like I told you at the start of the show, tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Central. We are going to be meeting and learning more about Sean Perry of the Four Horsemen. He is the lead vocalist and guitarist for the Metallica tribute band, the Four Horsemen, that's coming to Tulsa to the Venue Shrine on Friday, May 31st. You guys need to make sure you get your tickets now at stubwire.com for that show, so it doesn't sell out and then you're left high and dry without a ticket. Go get your tickets tonight for that show. So we'll be talking to Sean Perry tomorrow night at 6 o'clock Central. Right after Sean, we are going to catch up with Mark Nelson of Let's Zeppelin, a tribute, as well as Rock Anthem. So we're looking very forward to that interview. We want to give a shout out to our sponsor, DEB Concerts. Just like what we just told you, Four Horsemen show is coming up May 31st at the Venue Shrine. Doors at 7, show at 8. Please go get those tickets at stubwire.com tonight. Pick one up, invite some friends. Let's have a great time. Scott's and my band gets to open for those guys. We're really stoked about that. It's going to be a great time. DEB Concerts also will have a stage out at Rocklahoma this year. Make sure you guys pick up your tickets and head out there for a great time. We mentioned our new sponsors at the start of the show that we are so glad to have on board. Pest Patrol, for all of your pest control needs, call Todd Brannon at 918-582-7378 for all your pest control needs. Also, Horizon Plumbing will take care of all your plumbing needs. Give those guys a call at 918-258-9100. They work on weekends. They take good care of everyone that needs help in the plumbing world, so give those guys a call. They are great friends of ours. Thank you, Sycamo Filmworks, for a great intro for the show. If you have any video needs, you can email sycamo@gmail.com. He'll hook you up. If you need photos, go to shipmanphotos.com. They'll take really great looking photos for your band or business. It's your branding done right. We also want to say thank you to Dustin Little from Okie PC. This will be his last month as a sponsor of our show, but he has been very good and faithful to support us all this time. So we will say thank you and goodbye to Okie PC after this month. We appreciate all the support. If you guys do have any IT needs, call Dustin at 918-640-0892 or email dustin@okiepc.com. If you need screen printing done, get a hold of Todd Cook at Identity Merch, 918-521-5660, or you can email todd@identitymerch.com. All right, man. What else you got before we get out of here?
Man, I don't have anything. Just a great, we got to kick back and do it again tomorrow. So
I know.
If you guys tune in with us, help us again, share our stream on your favorite pages and stuff. And just hit like, follow us on Tulsa Music Stream. And always hit subscribe on our Tulsa Music Stream YouTube page as well. We're almost to 1,000 and we can't wait to get there. We're very, very close. So
yeah.
Every subscribe gets us that one step closer.
Yeah, if everyone in the show tonight will go subscribe to our YouTube channel right now, I think we'll break that 1,000 mark. Again, thank you to so many great viewers. Yoko, Gina, Ron, Angela, Michelle, Tim, Gay Fishback, everybody, all of you guys watching tonight, what a great time we had. Let's do it again tomorrow. We'll see you guys tomorrow night here on Tulsa Music Stream. Thanks again for all your support. You guys have a great night, and we will talk to you soon. I'm looking for the goodbye screen. Here it is. Have a great night, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.